Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests Baby, a weekly podcast about software testing, QA processes, agile, and other general geekery. My name's Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. Hello listeners, welcome to episode 21. It's been a busy week over at LTATB Towers, which is a lot harder to say than it is to write. I have been at Black Hat Manchester, as I mentioned, last weekend. I only managed one day because I feel a bit coldy and everyone gets con crud anyway. I didn't want to like be a sort of Typhoid Mary-like thing. But it was fun, the one day that I managed. I did a talk. I went to lots of interesting talks, so that was really good. I am at PHPNW this weekend. If there's an uncon track, I might be doing a talk, I might not, I'll see how it goes. And this is only my second time going, but even though I'm not a developer and I don't really do PHP, it's still a fantastic conference. Great people go, it's just generally a great event, the talk. There are plenty of talks there for people like me to go to, so that's going to be fun. If you have a ticket and you're going to be there, hit me up. And secondly, this is not the episode I was actually going to release this week. This is being recorded a little bit on the fly, so the notes won't be as good as normal, because this is kind of emerged pretty much today at work, and so it's had me thinking a lot, and I wanted to get my thoughts out and hear what other people think, because it's kind of a thing that I'm not really sure about, and it's going to be one of the things that's very individual, so I'm kind of interested to see the spread. If people want to get in touch, that'd be great. So I want to talk about test plans, documenting test sessions, things like that, because I've recently taken on a project from another tester whose workload got a bit crazy. Come on the project, I've done a sprint's worth of testing, all fine. And a new person's come on recently on the client side who doesn't like that our acceptance criteria doesn't contain edge cases. His example was in some acceptance criteria that references a field should only accept a whole number, that the acceptance criteria didn't specifically say that if something that isn't a whole number was put in, what should happen. That wasn't specified in the acceptance criteria, it just said, and a whole number would be put in. And we generally don't document edge cases in acceptance criteria because there could be a lot of them. It seems like a lot of work to put in the acceptance criteria. It seems like it'll make the acceptance criteria long and unwieldy. Like, if there are specific cases where specific error messages have to come up, like, then maybe we'll document that error message. If it has to be something specific rather than just you can't enter a word here, we'll mention the specificness of that error message. But for the most part, we don't really write edge cases in. Also, it makes acceptance criteria long and unwieldy, which a lot of clients don't enjoy reading, they don't pay attention to. And sometimes if they're not very technical minded, it can get quite intimidating for them. So we generally don't do that. Generally, we just have the basic acceptance criteria of what we do, and the edge cases are taken. It's taken really that we will test them. And it's something I don't even really think about. When I tested that piece of functionality, I put letters and 0. something number in, and it rejected them. The error message was fine. I didn't really think anything of it. And then I realised when I looked back at my test session that I hadn't even documented that test. I hadn't documented that that it only accepted a whole number. Which I think is actually a failing on my part in this situation, because I think I got a bit lax with the documenting of my tests. And because I've been so busy, I've been documenting the bits in the acceptance criteria, but accessibility and browser testing, device testing and the validation testing, I've been doing it all, but I've not necessarily been saying this works in all browsers as expected, this meets, you know, these accessibility standards. And that is a failing on my part. I almost definitely should be at least writing little notes on that throughout my test sessions. The way our test sessions are is we use Jira Capture, which has a nice little plugin for browsers and works really well with the test session. So we open a test session, the acceptance criteria from the story goes in the description, and the other bugs that we're testing against that story, so if stories come back to me, they get put in the test session as well. So the test session is against the story. The testing subtask, because we break our different parts of the story into subtasks. So we'll have a basic one, it'll be back end, front end testing. They get split up as needed across different ones. Like some have a separate subtask for acceptance tests and documentation, some don't, depends on the thing. So the test sessions against the story, the testing subtask, and any bugs as part of that story. And then all my testing notes go in there, any screenshots and stuff either go against bugs. Sometimes they'll go against the story if there's only really one or two. If there looks like there's going to be a few, I might put them against the testing subtask. So I've got some notes on there, which I might start doing more for this client specifically, maybe, if they want me to really dig down and write all this stuff down. I mean, we were talking to our operations manager in response to this email that sent, saying, look, do you actually test this stuff? There's no documentation to say in the acceptance criteria that you test this stuff. And our operations manager was like, okay, so what is there anything we can learn from here? What about like guidelines, maybe not test plans, but maybe some guidelines? And I kind of instantly bristled at that. Well, bristled is probably the wrong word. I didn't agree that documenting it would probably be the best sort of way to go about it, because your documentation for guidelines of testing this sort of stuff is either going to be really vague, like validation will be tested as applicable in context, or really specific for each project. And that goes the way of spec writing and full-on test plans and stuff that we really don't really want to be moving into, I don't think, because I don't think there's that much. I think the benefits to cost sort of calculations they fall more on the cost side than the benefit side. So I replied internally to the email, to the project manager, the lead dev and the operations manager, with my response, which was essentially bits and pieces from episode 15, I've just gone to check, which was, so can you pin a tail on it and call it a fox, which is about my test plans and how I have a mental sort of priority of testing, which goes from, can I get to the feature, does it meet the acceptance criteria, and then goes outwards to testing if it's fit for purpose, and then all the little bits that aren't, that you would test anyway, your browser, accessibility, device, does the validation work, all the other stuff in context for the stuff, for the thing you're testing. And we're not sure if they're going to accept that, because it is kind of a lot to expect a client on faith that you are covering all this stuff off without documentation, especially if the client is coming from somewhere that used to write in specs, where everything's written out. So I think what I need to do is, first of all, I need to, in general anyway, slow down and be a lot better at documenting my tests, including all the stuff around everything, and not just documenting the stuff that doesn't work. So I can say, yes, I have tested this, this, and this. And then, but I was wondering, and I'm going to ask this in the tester Slack channel as well today, if anyone else has come across this sort of situation where a client's gone, well, how do I know you are testing things correctly? How do I know that you're doing the job that I'm paying you to do? Especially as we have dedicated test team and dedicated time for the tester. I guess it's another way of justifying our worth, in a way, justifying the budget that they've got, because, again, they are spending money on me as a resource. And so they've got to justify that I am doing work and worthy of the budget. I think I can't remember if I mentioned this on an episode before, I don't think I have, that I think sometimes QA, it's and dedicated tester, it's hard to sort of justify the budget, because you don't see the direct money coming in, like the direct profit for the company sometimes, or the direct benefit of the cost coming in. Like developers, you have to have developers, because without developers you don't have a product in a digital agency. You kind of need PMs, because you don't have PMs, you don't have that communication barrier. And that's like direct sort of, that they are in charge of the client, the relationship between the client and the company. So there's that sort of the money they're pulling in, that profit, the developers, there's that profit. And then it comes to testers, and yeah, you can justify that we're needed, because we make work better, we help the team make work better, and you can see our influence throughout the whole project. But there's no direct sort of, and this is where the profit comes in. It's a much more long-term goal, because if the quality of the work overall is better, you get a reputation, everything goes smoothly, the whole projects go easily. And they're more like, I mean, yeah, you can argue they're more likely to come in on budget to the satisfaction of the client, which is profit in a way, if someone comes in under budget, for example. But I still think there's that kind of level of justification that sometimes I feel is needed for our role as testers, I guess. So yeah, I basically wanted to put this situation out there, because I was a bit stumped by it, because other than documenting what I do, there's no way going in really of saying, yes, we test all this. And I'm not sure how to convey that to the client, like, other than taking my word on it and then reviewing my test logs afterwards, which doesn't seem like the easiest way of doing things, or frankly the best use of their time. But if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. So yeah, anyone else come across this? Does everyone else like document literally everything in all their test sessions? And I've just dropped the ball entirely because I've been incredibly busy and been a bad tester. Any other options that I'm just not thinking of at the moment? I would love to hear people's thoughts on this. I really would. And I'm going to wrap it up here. I said, I'm not going to have good notes for this because this has literally just all come out of my head. But I will put some notes together for the show notes. And yeah, I will probably, you'll probably get the episode that I was going to release this week, next week. Maybe, or I'll leave it for another week, who knows. But yes, I hope you're all well. Have a good week and I will see you next week. Bye. We'll be right back.